Who says you can't go home again? Well, novelist Thomas Wolfe said it in 1940, and that seems to be the case in these transient times, but writer Michael Perry defies the aphorism in his book Population 485, Meeting Your Neighbors One Siren at a Time. Perry returned to New Auburn, Wisconsin, after 12 years away, and got to know the people in the place again by joining the volunteer fire department and rescue squad. Michael Perry joins us now from member station WHWC in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Welcome.
I'm pleased to be here. Thanks for having me.
How did fighting fires and going out on rescues ease that transition to going home?
Well, I'm kind of a fellow that keeps to himself and doesn't really join any sort of civic organization, or I don't belong to the local churches. I don't go to the local taverns. I keep to myself, but I wanted somehow to become part of the community. And it struck me that joining the fire department was the perfect way to do that. It's a little simpler than that, even in the fact that when I moved back, my two brothers and my mother were already on the fire department.
You got to know people in what must have been the most unpleasant and trying circumstances, through blood, through pain, at times death.
Yeah, I write about the fact that New Auburn is a small town, population 485, as the title of the book says, but we have our pockets of darkness, as I say, and since trouble is a volunteer fire department summons, we're often the first to discover these little pockets of darkness. And so, yes, you are actually introduced to your neighbors via tragedy most of the time. But ultimately, I think that sort of thing gives you a sense of community, a sense of strength, a sense of belonging, in part because there's really no place to hide from it. I have a fairly long chapter in the book about death, and I talk about the fact that over time, if you serve on a fire department or as an EMT on an ambulance service, you begin to associate certain specific points of geography with death or with accidents. And while that sounds morbid and haunting at first, and indeed can be, eventually it's the kind of thing that gives you a real deep sense of history and attachment to a place.
Can you read from page 142?
All around these townships, I see the dead. It is landscape as sepulcher. There's the school sign erected in memory of Tummer Olson. There's the ski hill where Lisa Stansky died. In that house, we found an old woman gone in her bed. Here is where Harry lay. There is the house from which they ran with the Jensen baby, too late. Bob shot himself in that cabin. The train hit Jake right at that bend. How important this is, this constant remembering, these unremarkable memorials. Every death is a memory that ends here.
Your sister-in-law was one of those victims.
Yes, the book was about 80% finished, and indeed I had already written the final chapter of the book when my brother, who is also on the volunteer fire department and a medical first responder, was doing chores in his barn, and the pager went off, and he jumped in his truck, and he was the first on scene, and it was a two-vehicle crash, and the most seriously injured victim was his wife of 7 weeks, and he was alone with her, and then my mother was second on scene. And she did not survive the crash. As a matter of fact, she didn't even survive the scene. She was declared dead right there at the roadside. And he gave her his breath. He did the things that you were trained to do. She still had a heartbeat when he arrived. When that happened, apart from the obvious family concerns that I had for my brother, it became obvious to me that what had happened to him was what the book was all about, because he remembers, he told me, even in the midst of what is to me still this unthinkable personal moment, he remembered hearing the sirens come, and he said the thought that came unbidden to him was, these are my friends coming to help me. And that just spoke to this entire book. And so after a little time had passed, I sat down with him at his kitchen table one evening, and I said, you know, I'm writing this book, and what happened to you is germane to this book, and I'd like to ask your permission to write about it. If you say no, I'll never bring it up again. And he sat there quietly for a little while, and then he said, go ahead and write about it. I trust you, but I'm not sure I ever want to read it.
Did that experience give you some new perspective about the work you were doing and the people who you knew and you were doing that work with?
Surprisingly enough, the answer is no, because I have a line in the book that of all the things that we felt, my brothers and I, my family, we didn't ask why. Because we knew from our experience, and we knew from answering the call when it was our neighbors in trouble, that these things happen all the time, and they happen all around the world. It's just that this time it happened to us. And so, believe it or not, I think rather than learn anything new, we just confirmed what we hoped, and that was that still in this horribly messy and difficult world, that there are places where you can cultivate neighborliness and friendship and just be good to your fellow man, and that sometimes that comes around to serve you and to bear you through your own trouble.
Why did you go home?
Well, it really had to do with just a feeling of being centered, of being comfortable in this place. I speak the language there in every sense. And even though my profession is a little unusual for that area, and I get a little bit of humorous mileage out of that in the book, so I get asked a lot if it was difficult for me to find my place in the community when I returned, because as I say in the book, or actually I don't say it in the book, but when I left New Auburn, I was a good student, a farm boy, and a fair defensive end. I returned 12 years later a long-haired writer with soft hands and a nursing degree. So there was a certain amount of street credibility to recover with some of my buddies who, you know, from the gun rack crowd, if you will. And so I get asked, well, was it difficult for you to find your place in the community? And I say no, because ultimately I was still the Perry boy. And the bottom line is, as long as you grab the hose and run into the burning building, they really don't care what you do in your spare time.
So. You actually address this nicely on page 124 with the paragraph at the bottom that begins, "Last time I was in the Legion Hall."
Last time I was in the Legion Hall, it was to perform. A seed corn representative hosting a customer appreciation luncheon hired me to read some of my work for a group of local farmers. That was daunting. I stood there with my essays in my hands, looked at their red faces and thick fingers, and remembered the old "football builds character" speech my high school football coach used to deliver on parents' night. I was always embarrassed for him, knowing half his audience had been up and grinding since 5 a.m., milking cows, bucking hay bales, lugging feed, wondering if the bank might cut them some slack. Football? Standing inside a manure spreader chipping frozen cow manure off the beater bars when it's 10 below, that builds character. So I led off my reading with the thing about learning to write by cleaning calf pens. That eased things quite a bit. Physical labor is not in and of itself virtuous. But when you can carry your work around on 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper, you stand before a group like this with your metaphorical hat in your pink-palmed hands.
You seem to find rural life odd, but you celebrate it as well. What do you want readers to understand about life in the sticks?
I guess what I hoped is that people would see a little bit of themselves in these characters, even if they didn't necessarily assume they would relate to them. And also just that honesty. One of the characters that I came to love in the book, I call him Bob the One-Eyed Beagle. And he has the nickname One-Eyed Beagle because he's severely cross-eyed. As I describe him in the book, this is a guy with one eye, one kidney, and two ex-wives, both of whom work at the only gas station in town, which means he has to, every morning he's got to drive 9 miles south to the nearest town to get gas and coffee because they won't serve him at the local gas station. But he's a classic example of a guy that if you read the book, you find out he's goofy, he's strange, but he's also kind-hearted. And, you know, it becomes evident when you read the book that he is not the smoothest talker, perhaps not the most erudite fellow at times, and apparently not husband of the year. But he will leave his bed at 3 a.m. to hold the hand of an 80-year-old lady having chest pain. And boy, that says something. And so I hoped, I guess, that somehow I could look at the complications in all of us. You know, I believe in the book, I refer to myself as a bundle of contradictions, and I think we all are.
Michael Perry is at home in New Auburn, Wisconsin. He's the author of Population 485, Meeting Your Neighbors One Siren at a Time. We've reached him in Eau Claire, Wisconsin at member station WHWC. Thank you so much, Michael.
Man, thanks for having me. This was very enjoyable.
And that's all things considered from NPR News. Our piece on rural war deaths was produced by Devar Ardalan. I'm Howard Berkus.